Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins three lines from the bottom of Daf Zayin Omid Aleph. The Gemara opens with a quote from the end of the Mishnah on Daf Beis Omid Aleph. A person had declared Menude Ani Loch. Rabbi Kiva Hoyochoychech Bozeh Lahachmir. Rabbi Akiva was inclined to be restrictive, to accept it as a neder, as a vow. Now, in general, the word menuda or the word nidui in other contexts has to do with a form of excommunication, where a person who is in nidui, he's excommunicated, so he is not to participate in, we'll say, daily interaction with people. That's a very, very general statement. The Gemara here will be interested in some variations on that word or idea and what effects it has. Before we get into our Gemara, though, I think we'll go back to the Beis Omid Aleph and simply read the Rashi that you will find over there. And Rashi there on Beis Omid Aleph, at the beginning, toward the end of the Mishnah, he comments, Menuda Aniloch, a person who says that, Kamo she'im hoya benidui, de osir lei lisa velitein bahadei, just like a person who is in formal excommunication, it would be forbidden to do business with him, kach osar nafshe olei, so too when someone regarding himself says Minude Aniloch, I am Minude to you, that would be, in effect, he is forbidding the friend to benefit from him, from the speaker. So now regarding that language, Minude Aniloch, does that actually create a vow, namely a state of prohibition? So Rabbi Kiva was inclined to be Machmir, to say yes, it does impose a state of prohibition. However, it's not 100% clear to Rabbi Kiva that that is the meaning. The Gemara, three lines from the bottom of Zayin Omid Aleph, Menuda Aniloch v'chulei, Omar Abaye, Moide Rabbi Kiva le'inyan Malkus. Rabbi Kiva will concede that with regard to one who violates this vow, and the result would have been lashings, she'eino loke. In this case, there will be no lashings. The im kain, if Rabbi Kiva held that it's a full-fledged vow, the violation of which imposes a lashing punishment, nisni, then the text of the Mishnah should have read, Rabbi Akiva machmir. Rabbi Kiva is stringent, is strict, with regard to that, but that's not the language. The Lashon of the Mishnah was choychech bozeh lahachmir, which means he is inclined to be restrictive. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, you notice a new geometric form, a house shape. On the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, a house appears, and we've written Machloikis Rav Popov of Rav Chisda, Be'eze Lashon Hoya HaMachloikis Rabbi Kiva V'Chachamim. There is a machlokis between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Kiva's name appeared in the context of Menuda Aniloch, where he was inclined to be machmir. Apparently, there is another opinion that disagrees with Rabbi Kiva. So the question is, regarding what language, what expression is there a point of disagreement? So Rav Papa appears here in a house form, and on Omid Beis, five lines from the top, you can see in our marked Gemaras, which, by the way, you can access by contacting us at gmarkings@gmail.com if one is interested in accessing a marked Gemara. You'll see there, he says that the expression concerning which there's a machlokas Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim is Mishamtina. According to Rav Papa, Mishamtina is not a point of machlokas. Now, as we said at the beginning of our Masechta, while we learn Maseches Nedarim, there are phrases, there are words, terms that are characteristic of this Masechta that are difficult to translate in a standard, let's say, literal or translation form, and we'll look through from time to time at the Mefarshim to get a feeling of what the words mean. So now we continue with the Gemara, second line from the bottom of Zayin Omer Aleph, Omer Rav Papa, Be Nadina Minoch, De Kule Almo Lo Pligi De Oser. If a person were to say that, everyone would agree, even the Chachamim would agree, that that constitutes a vow. If we look at Rashi, three lines from the end, Nadina Mimoch, De Mashma Beferush, that is an explicit statement, Ehei Minude Loch, I am considered Minude, that we said before, excommunication, an expression of prohibition, I am prohibited to you. Dehainu vadai mekulei alma aser. There, everyone agrees that that is definitely a prohibition. The rush, the lower part of the narrow lines, benadina mimach mekulei alma aser, demashma misnoideid ani, misnoideid means to drift away, umuvdal mimcha, and separated from you, v'havei tfei mi meruchakani mimcha, Aliba de Shmuel. This expression of Nadina is even more of a distancing expression than the Loshon, than the expression of Meruchokani. V'ha de Tana lo money lehu v'ha de Tani the Tana lo money lehu behead behadei yodos masisin, that which this does not appear amongst the yodos of the Mishnah, Ika Lemeimar, Tana Vishir, Viod Yodos Tuva, Ika Delo Tana. The Tana is not giving the exhaustive list of yodos, but this would have been considered an example of a yad, as an example of a partial expression of prohibition, of vowing. So now we continue with one more commentary. And we notice in the Tosfos commentary, you'll notice very close to the end of the Tosfos commentary, three lines from the end of the page. Nadino minoch kuleamot lo pligi daaser pirush mishum de loshon no v'nodhu. It's a language of moving away, of distancing. Im kein moyel shapir beloy shani oicholoch. This language of Nadino is very clear, even without adding the expression of She'ani Ocheloch, which we discussed in our previous shiur. This alone is clear. V'shapir havi yodai mochichos tfei mimudrani mimcha. This is a clear, partial language than mudrani mimcha. Dein l'safkoi barachokas dalan amos. As opposed to Mudrani Mumcha, here we don't doubt or raise the possibility that all the guy is saying is I'm moving four amas away from you. Mishum deloshen nadino lo mashma kalshen harchoka lo mashma shani no v'nod milahonos mimcha. The explanation of this language is that I am moving away from you, from benefiting from you. So that is a loshen, an expression of a vow. So Rav Papa says that Nadina, everyone agrees, is a binding vow of prohibition. The Gemara continues, Mishamtina minoch l'kulei alma shori. This word, Mishamtina, everyone will agree, does not indicate prohibition. We look again at the commentaries, we look at the Tosfos where we left off, second line from the very end, Mishamtina kulei alma lo pligi de shori, de loshen klolohu. Mishaptana is a language of curse. Kamo miklani mimcha, ve'afilu im timsulom ha-sheminada atzmoi milamu dalar ha-moisov, mikomokom israno lo mashma. There is no implied expression of prohibition of benefit here. The Rush also comments on this second line from the bottom, Mishamtano lukulam al-shori, deloshon shamto hu, velo yad l'neder. Shamto means it's an expression of excommunication, and it's not a partial language of vow prohibition. Avol nadino mashma no dare, velo loshon nidui. The nadino expression that we discussed before, that implies vowing of prohibition and not an expression of excommunication. So far, we're explaining nadino, everyone agrees, is a expression of vow, of prohibition. Mishamtano is not. B'mai pligi, so then what is the point of machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbonan? B'menude aniloch. That is the expression that we saw in the Mishnah. The Rabbi Akiva Savar, here we're at the top of the of Omid Beis. The Rabbi Akiva Savar, Lishna de Niduya, who? Rabbi Akiva holds it's an expression of Niduya. And Rabbona Safri, Lishna de Mishamtana, who? And we just saw before that Mishamtana is an expression of Klola, but not a Loshon, not an expression of prohibition. So that when Rabbi Akiva says that the Loshon of Menude is a Lishna de Niduya, who, we're going to explain within the context that it's like Nadino. As we are recording this year, I just noticed that in the Tosfos he has that girsa of Nadino, which we saw before is an accepted language of vow, of prohibition. We continue in the Gemara on the third line from the top of Amud Beis, Upliga de Rav Chisda. Then Rav Papa's approach is at odds or different than that of Rav Chisda. Tahu gavro diomar mishamtino benichse debrei de Rav Yirmiya bar Abba. There was a person that said that I am mishamtino with regard to the properties of the son of Rav Yirmiya. Also lekami de Rav Chisda. The case came to Rav Chisda. Amalei leis de chosh la laha de Rabbi Akiva. No one takes into consideration in rendering the halacha like Rabbi Akiva. So that, as far as Rav Chisda is concerned, mishamtana is a point of machlokes where Rabbi Akiva says it is restrictive. And Rav Chisda says no one takes that into consideration, and hence the person would be allowed to benefit from those properties. Well, if Rav Chisda is saying that Rabbi Akiva views Mishamtana with restriction, that's not what Rav Papa said. Rav Papa said that Mishamtana, everyone, including Rabbi Akiva, agrees is non-restrictive altogether. So, Kosovar, this shows us that Rav Chisda holds the Mishamtana pligi, that Mishamtana was the point of controversy. If the structure is not 100% clear, then take a look at the arrow that you see here. And at this point, we've dashed underline Mishamtana and squiggle underline pligi. Compare this with Omen Aleph, where you see Mishamtana is dashed underlined under Rav Papa. And it said there that regarding Mishamtana, Everyone agrees it's mutter. As you can see, we have a slash mark in the Gemara, indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. On the side of the Gemara, you can see we've indicated a mivneh, a structural note, and a triangle is featured. This highlights halochos shel Rav. These are rulings of Rav. Triangles that are numbered 1 through 3, halachas shorav, hakshuros lenidui. These are three halachas that are related to the topic of excommunication. And now here, we're dealing with formal excommunication as opposed to the Gemara before, where the question was, what happens if a person uses the lashon of menudeh in the context of making a vow? But here, we're dealing with a person that is excommunicated and how to proceed forward. Omar Rabbi Ilo, Omar Rav, Niduhu Befonov, a person who was formally excommunicated, and it was the excommunication was issued in his presence, Ein Matirin Lo Elo Befonov. It cannot be undone unless he is present. Niduhu Shelo Befonov, if a person was excommunicated but from a distance, meaning the guilty party wasn't present when the rabbi who excommunicated him was issued that ruling. So matirin lo bein befonov bein shelo befonov. The release of the individual from the excommunication can be done whether he is present or even if not. Omar Rav Chonin Omar Rav hashomea haskoras Hashem mipi chavero tzorach linadoso. If one is a witness, a listener, he hears someone uttering the name of the Almighty for naught, called Moitzi Shem Shemayim Levatola, so as you as a listener have to excommunicate the offender. Vimlo nidu, and if you didn't take the action of excommunicating the offender, hu atzmo yehe benidui, then you as a listener deserve to be excommunicated. There's a point in the Rush. You might notice we have a star in the wide lines of the Rush commentary, and there we've noted v'imlo nidu hu atzmo yeh benidui pish roi lisnados. He deserves to be put into excommunication. The Gemara elaborates shekol mokalim shehazkoras Hashem mitzuya shom anius mitzuya v'anius kemisa. Wherever the name of the Almighty is uttered for naught, there you will find poverty. In other words, that what results from the pointless recitation of the Almighty's name, the result of that is poverty. And poverty is like death. Where do we know that poverty is like death? Shenemar, there is a pasuk concerning Dosan and Aviram. These are people that were antagonists toward Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu was told that the people that were antagonizing you are dead. Ki mesu kol hanoshim v'tanya, and we have to just point out that when that pasuk was says that they are dead, they actually were not physically dead, but they had become impoverished. V'tanya komokam shenosu chachomim einayim oimisa oioini. Wherever the chachomim, now literally means they placed their eyes, but it's wherever they issued, we'll say, an excommunication. So what follows from that is either death or poverty. Let's go over some of the points that we see in the Mefarshim on this section of Gemara. The Rashi says, a little more than halfway down the short Rashi column, kol mokom shenosu chachomim einayim la'odom shenidu, regarding a person that the chachomim, that the sages excommunicated, omeis onofu banius v'achi tzorech lenadoso. The reason, and this is the reason that we have to excommunicate someone who utters the name of Hashem for naught, kedei shipol banius, so that he should become impoverished. Tahainu kamisa, that's like a death penalty. So it's true that uttering the name of Hashem is a serious offense, but there is no court-ordained death penalty for that. Nevertheless, he is deserving of death, and in order to accomplish that, we will excommunicate him, which leads to impoverishment, which, as we demonstrated before, is tantamount to death. There's another comment that we want to look at together in the Rosh. The Rosh is found in the wide lines, about the seventh, eighth wide line. Shekol mokum shaskor sashem mitzuyah shamani is mitzuyah. Wherever the mention of God's name for naught is made, there you will find poverty. Dichtiv b'chol mokum asher azkir shmi avoy lecha brachticha. This pasuk says that wherever I give permission for my name to be mentioned, as it, for example, in the context of brachos, in the context of the priestly benediction, it says there will be bracha, I will bless you. Bracha hainu osher. Bracha is a term that means plenty. It means abundance, wealth. Dechtiv uberachecha b'chomas yodecha. Umenazkoras mitzvah ma'asheres. We can then infer from the positive to the negative, from the fact that the positive mentioning of Hashem's name leads to enrichment, michlal daskoras avera midaldeles, leaving us to conclude that sinful mentioning of Hashem's name results in impoverishment. There's another comment that you see in the Rosh, just a few lines later, the Tanyum Shmuel Oymer, Omar Komokum Shosachomeinem Omiso Oini. In our Gemara text, we don't have that introduction of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, but there are alternative texts that do include that. And the Rosh comments, Umaisi Oyraya Shoini Shokul Kamiso. Another proof is brought over here that impoverishment is equal to death. It's mentioned. It's mentioned in a number of places. You find that as a rabbinic expression. He cast his eyes upon him, and he became a heap of bones. And that's a reference to Oni. He became impoverished. The Perek Bamed Madlikin Shmuelzer Beno Kshotzim in Amora Komok Shotzu Einem Bohaya Nisraf. You see in Gemara and Shabbos also this idea of their when everything that they gazed upon in displeasure immediately was burnt. Let's turn back to the Gemara. Omar, we're at the last narrow line. Omar Rabbi Abba, have a ki'imno kameid Rav Huna. Rabbi Abba says, I was standing in the presence of Rav Huna. Shomalach itzo d'afko haskor sashem levatola. And a woman was heard mentioning the name of the Almighty for naught. Shamto v'shol l'alter ba'apo. Rav Huna excommunicated her and then immediately released her from the excommunication in her presence. Shmami notlas. From this incident, three halachic conclusions can be reached. Number one, Shmami no, Hashemei askoras Hashem mipi chavero tzorch l'nadoso. That one who hears the unnecessary utterance of God's name, the listener, the one who hears it, must excommunicate the offender. Ushmami no, nido b'fonov, ein matirin lo elo b'fonov. When the excommunication is done in the presence of the offender, the release from that nidui, from that excommunication, must be done only in front of, in the presence of the offender. Ushmamino, ein bein nidui lahaforo velo klum. And a third conclusion is that the amount of time between the nidui and its hafora, I mean, and its reversal, its undoing, is can be of minimal time, meaning no, it can be immediate, as we saw in the story. So these three points one can easily derive from the incident. As you can see, a new marking appears, a crown shape, and on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh heading, this highlights Halochas Shrav Gidl Shemitzatet Es Rav. Rav Gidl will be citing Rav Be'inyone Talmidei Chachomim Mitzvos V'Talmud Torah. Comments that have to do with Torah scholars, with mitzvos, and with the study of Torah. We continue then with the series of Rav comments. This is the third Rav comment. Omar Rav Gidol, Omar Rav. Talmud Chocham, Menade Liatzmoi, Umefer Liatzmo. As far as the understanding of this halacha of Talmud Chocham, Menade Liatzmoi, Umefer Liatzmo, the Ran presents a couple of different opinions on this. We will translate it for the time being, the Gemara, and that is that a Talmud Chacham can impose upon himself excommunication and can then release himself from that state. The Gemara says, Pshita, is that not obvious? The Ran points out that some don't even include this girsa of Pshita, but assuming for the time being that the Gemara's girsa is as it is, if you put yourself into excommunication, then certainly you should be able to release yourself from it. So is that not obvious? The Gemara says it's not so obvious. Mahum detema ein chovush matir atzmo mibeisu asurin. Literally, this phrase means one who is incarcerated cannot release himself from imprisonment. There is a halacha that if a person made a vow, if he took an oath, he made a vow regarding something. In fact, one cannot undo one's own vows. Someone else has to, a Beis Din or a Talmud Chacham has to undo your vow. You can't do it yourself. So there is precedent for thinking otherwise. So I might have thought that regarding Nidui as well, if a Talmud Chacham imposed Nidui upon himself, maybe he can't release himself. Chomash Malon, so Rav Gidol is telling me, in fact, he is able to do it. Hechi Domi, what is an example of this? Under what circumstances might this arise where a person would put himself, where a Talmud Chacham would put himself into excommunication? Kiha de Marzutra Chasida. As was the case involving Marzutra, the pious one. Ki mechayev bar beirav shamta, if a Torah scholar was in fact guilty of being excommunicated, was deserving of it, and he was the one that needed to issue that ruling. Mishamis nafshe bereisha, he would first put himself into excommunication. V'hodar mishamis bar beirav, and then he would excommunicate that Torah scholar that needed to be subjected to that. We look in the Rosh, four lines from the end. Mishamis nafshe v'ad mishamis sumra ponan. The mishum kovet Torah hoya kosha be'enov l'nado. So it was. Difficult, emotionally difficult for Marzutra to excommunicate a Torah scholar. So out of honor that one bestows to Torah, it was hard for him to do that. Chamirim perek mokum shenagu, b'marova mimanu anigido d'sumra bonav v'lo mimanu ashata. The Gemara himself says that it's preferable to issue lashings to an offending Torah scholar than to excommunicate him. Fuhoya haminade, and here he was menade. Voya koshebeinov menade satzmutchila, and therefore he put himself in the same boat, so to speak, by excommunicating himself. Inami, another explanation of why he did this: kedeshlo yisatzel v'yishkach milhater. If he put himself in excommunication, so he won't be lazy in undoing it, and hence this will hasten the reversal of the excommunication that takes place afterwards. The Tosfos explains that the bottom line, Mishamis Nafshe, Hoya Marchik Atzmud Al Amus Mechaberov, when he says he put himself into excommunication, it means he would maintain a physical distance of 4 Amos from anyone else. We continue in the Gemara with this story of Marzutra Chasida, who, when a Talmud Chacham, when a Tzumra Bonan deserved excommunication, we said Mar Zutra would excommunicate himself first, and then the Barbe Rav, the Chiayel Lebeise, and when he would get home, Shori Lenafshe, Vahadar Shori Le. He would then undo his own self-imposed Nidui, and then undo the one that was imposed on the Torah student. If we look in the together in the Rush, Shori Lenafshe, Shili Koshan Shibesu, Bedabra Melov, Vyavoy Zakai, Vyatir Zakai. It was important for him to first undo, when he got home, to undo his own self-imposed excommunication so that the members of his household wouldn't be in violation of the rules of excommunication in their communicating with him. The Gemara continues. V'omar Rav Gidol Omar Rav. We continue now at the top of Daf Ches Omar Aleph. Minayin shenishboyin likayim es hamitzvah. From where do we know that one can vow in order to fulfill a mitzvah? The Rush at the beginning says, Minayin shenishboyin likayim hamitzvah. A person can swear to fulfill a particular mitzvah, and we're not worried that he might come to stumble and violate the Shvua. Let us point out that in general, swearing and vowing is something that we highly discourage. And yet, here, in this specific instance of vowing to fulfill a mitzvah, we're saying it would be allowed. So from where do we know that? The Gemara continues, Shenemar nishbati v'kaimo lishmor mishpatei tzidkecha. I swear and fulfill your precepts. The Gemara asks, V'halo mushba v'yomid mahar Sinai hu? How is it that a vow would take hold when he's already pre-bound from the time of the giving of the Torah? Imagine someone swears to put on tefillin. He's already bound by the oath of Sinai, by the collective Jewish people's acceptance of the Torah to put on the tefillin. Let us take a look at the Rush on this as well. V'alo mushba v'yoymehu, l'kayim ha-mitzvah, is already pre-bound to fulfill the mitzvah. V'ein shvua chal shvua. And there is a very significant principle that says that when one is already bound, a second oath cannot be superimposed on him. D'arshim v'shvuas m'lar v'lehetiv, d'abatos r'shutz ayri v'lo b'kiyu mitzvah. The psukim that deal with the effectiveness of an oath is based on the pasuk l'armahitiv, and that indicates a vow over a topic that's otherwise optional. But if it's an issue, if it's a topic that's not optional but rather obligatory, it doesn't conform to the regulations of the Torah concerning shvuas, concerning oaths, and therefore there's no oath here to begin with. So we have to, let's say, refine Rav Gidol's teaching, Ela ha komash malon. Rather, the following is what Rav Gidol Amar Rav is telling us. Deshori le li'inish lizvuzei nafshei. It is permissible for a person to increase his diligence, to hasten, lizvuzei is an expression meaning to hasten or increase diligence of individuals with regard to their mitzvah performance. And again, we continue with the Rush. Eloho kamashmo deshori lizvuzei nafshei, v'lo havei maskir shem shemayim levatola im nishma b'shem. If a person swears to fulfill a mitzvah and he uses the name of the Almighty, even though he's pre-bound, this would not fall into the category of a false or unnecessary use or mention of the Almighty's name. V'nishba b'lo shem nami, and even if he were swearing without the use of God's name, without this Gemara, sakadei techamina, I would have thought the ulcer, it's forbidden. It's forbidden to swear, even if it's concerning mitzvah fulfillment. Kidei shelo yisragalon mishvus. so that a person should not be accustomed to swearing. And come to swear about other things. Therefore, Rav Gil Marav says that as an exception to our strict objection to swearing, if you're swearing in the context of mitzvah performance, so you are not in violation of our general objection to swearing. As far as is there an actual oath that sets in over here, it appears quite clear that there isn't any actual oath that sets in because of the principle of mushpo v'oyme mehar sinai is already pre-bound. Ve'en shvua chal al shvua. The Omer of Gidol Amarav, Ho'imer Ashkim Veshna Peregze, Eshna Masech Tazu, person who says, I'm going to get up early and I'm going to learn a particular chapter of Torah, or I'm going to learn a tractate. Neder Godol Nodar Leleike Yisrael. This is a great, meaningful, binding vow that has been taken. That has been made to the Lord of Israel. Let us note the rush on the last narrow line. Neder godol nodar l'kol Yisrael lav hainu neder mamish. This isn't an actual neder in strict neder terms. Taluki neder el shmafis b'lavah nodur. The technical neder, an actual vow, takes hold only when you impose a prohibition on something based on something else, comparing the current item to something else that had been previously made prohibited. That's not what's happening here. You're not making something prohibited based on something else that had been made forbidden. You're vowing to get up early and learn a chapter of Torah. So the Rosh says, "Ela mechashivinon lekiilu nodar tzedakah." It's rather compared to someone who vowed to give charity. The Damriya Perakama, the Rosh Hashanah, beficha, quoting the pasuk beficha, which we actually saw a few dapim earlier, zu tzedakah, and that's in the context. That pasuk is in the general context of vows. So it's like a vow to give charity. The Gemara asks, even so, v'halo mushpo v'oymeid hu? Take note of the fact this question lasts a few lines. How can Rav Gil Marav say that this is a great vow, indicating that it is of a binding nature, and which would indicate that if he doesn't wake up early and study that chapter that he had taken upon himself, he would be in violation. He would be in violation of a vow. But the question is, why would that be? Is he not pre-bound to study Torah anyway? V'ein shvua chala al shvua, once one is bound by oath to fulfill a precept, a subsequent oath that one takes concerning that matter doesn't take hold. So what else might you say? My komash malon da filu ziruzi bi'alma. Since we have the principle ein shvua chala shvua, and we're already bound to the study of Torah, so what is Rav Gidol Marav telling me here? That it's allowed, a person is allowed to hasten himself, to increase his diligence through statements like this? Well, Hainu de Rav Gidol Kamaisa, that's what the previous Rav Gidol teaching said. Why do I need that to be repeated? The Gemara answers, Ha Komashmon. The following is what Rav Gidol Amarav is telling me over here. Kevon di boy potter nafsheg grishma shachas varvis. Since, as far as the precept of Torah study, we said that one is pre-bound. He is bound by oath from Sinai to study Torah. However, how much Torah is one bound, when we say bound by Sinai to engage in, we'll say, a minimum of Torah study, one fulfills his, we'll say, his basic obligation through the recitation of the morning and nighttime Kriyas Shema. What was the fellow swearing to do over here? He was swearing to learn a tractate or a chapter, something other than Kriyas Shema. So as far as what he is technically speaking, Mushba V'Oymed Mehar Sinai, that could have been fulfilled through a lesser amount of Torah study, something as minimal as the actual recitation of Shema, of Shacharis and Arvis. And since that is all he would need to do to fulfill his Sinai obligation, when he takes upon himself something extra, Mishum Hachi Chayel Shvuale, because of that, this Shvua actually takes hold. The Ran has an elaboration on this topic, and he points out that a person shouldn't be, so naive as to think that all he has to do in his lifetime is simply recite Kriya Shema of the morning and the evening, and with that he has fulfilled all of our expectations of him concerning Torah learning, because there are additional sources, and the Ran cites them, that one must be fluent in Torah learning, and one can't be fluent in Torah learning if all he knows is Kriya Shema of the morning and the evening. But nevertheless, as far as we'll call basic obligation is concerned, he can fulfill his basic obligation through the Kriya Shema of morning and evening, and therefore there is room for this vow of I'm going to wake up early and study this tractate, there's room for it to take hold. Now we can look together at the Ran, you will see on the fifth line under the Gemara text, Hok Mash Nikivan Di Boy Potter Nafshe Vuhude, Mistabli the Lav Dafke Ochimiftar. It's most likely that that's not really all he needs to do to fulfill his Torah obligations, his Torah study obligations. A person is expected to learn day and night according to his abilities, according to his strength. The first perek of Kedushin, it says, Vishinantam, that's the posik from Kriyashmash, the words of Torah should be sharp in your mouth. If someone should ask you a question in any area of Torah study, you shouldn't hesitate, but rather answer immediately. The recitation of the morning and evening Kriya Shema is not sufficient to enable a person to reach that level. From here, the Ran proves a principle that he had developed in Maseches Shavuos, the Chomidi Dosa Midrasha, anything that's not explicit in the Torah, but it's derived through Drasha, through expounding on verses, Afal Pishu Minat Torah, even though it is considered a Torah obligation, Kiv the Lesson Mefurish Bikro Behedya, since it's not explicitly spelled out in the verses, Shvua Chololov, a vow can take effect, so that regarding non-explicit Torah level obligations, the principle of Ein Shvua, Chalal Shvua, does not apply. And here, what are we saying? Since with regard to this matter of Torah study, you can fulfill your explicit Torah requirements. Dainu, what's the explicit Torah requirement? B'shalfu b'mecha, that which you say at the evening and when you arise in the morning. B'kriyash mashachas barbis. Mishum hachi chol shvua alei legamri afilu lekorban. Therefore, with regard to any additional Torah study, though your additional Torah study is Torah obligated, but it's not explicit. Therefore, there is room for this vow to take hold. And that's what's implied by the expression that Rav Gidol Marav said, that this is a neder godel. Klomar, it's a big neder. The whole din of, with regard to all the rules that apply to vows, kidvar rishus, as if someone had vowed regarding a matter of option. And there, if one violates such a vow, he's certainly guilty of whatever punishment that needs to be imposed. The Ran says that he developed this idea there in Maseches Shavuos with additional proofs. Now we turn back to the Gemara. Omar of Gidol, Omar Rav. Hoyimer lechavero, nashkin v'nishna perek zeh. Person says to his friend, let us get up early and study this chapter. A particular chapter of Torah. Olav lahashkim, it is obligatory upon him to get up and do it. She'nehemar, the posuk says, vayomer elai, kum tse'el habiko v'shom adaber osoch, for etze'el habiko, and the prophet says that the Almighty had told him to get up and go to the field, and there I, the Almighty, will speak with you. And the prophet said, I went to the field, and there he was. There the presence of the Almighty was already there. To appreciate this sixth teaching of Rav, let's again look into the Ran. The Ran, you can see in the wide lines, toward the second half of the wide lines, Olav lahashkim, it's upon him to get up early. Mistabro li, dochi komar, it's most likely that this is what is being taught here. Kevan shomar nashkim, hari kibulov shehu ma'orer bedover, kishem shu ma'orer me'achshov. He is saying that I'm going to arise, just like I am aroused now. Vitarti Kamashan, there are 2 points that are being taught here. Chado de Bekabolo Be'almo Lidvar Mitzvah Mahanya, that a mere acceptance to do a mitzvah is something that is binding, it's effective. The Mai Damrinan Hocha, that which is being said here, Lo Hiskir Lo Neder V'lo Shvua, well, he didn't mention a vow or an oath. You see that even without specific mention of language, of the language of a neder or shvua, a formal vow or oath, he's still bound. As we say that if a person expresses an intent to give charity, he is thereby bound. This applies to all mitzvah fulfillment. So that's 1 point, that with mere verbalizing, mere speech, without additional expressions of oaths and vows, he is bound when it comes to mitzvah fulfillment. Another point is that he has to wake up early, like we see in the pasuk where the Almighty, so to speak, Kiviyochol was there. The Almighty said, you get up and I will speak to you there. And there he was. He fulfilled what he said. So we are to pattern ourselves after the conduct of the Almighty, so to speak. And from here, Rav Gidol learns that he is in fact bound. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.